So yes, we're still in Genesis chapter 24, and I depend on Ken because he always marks where we left off.
Pick it up in verse 22.
We left off in verse 22, according to Ken. So let me recalibrate my notes. I don't know how. What did we end up? We ended up down a little rabbit trail last week, I think. What was that rabbit trail last week? Does anyone remember?
Why are we going back?
Well, I just want a context for where we are. Well, I'm not going back down the rabbit trail. We're just going to peek at it. What's that?
Question.
It was his question.
Whether there was... Oh, it was Ivan's fault.
Yeah. Say it again. Question.
Is there one?
There was the one.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Is there one?
Is there one? Because that... because the servant, Eleazar...
One more question.
Had prayed that God would grant him success today, show love, and find the one who he's appointed for your servant Isaac. And so this happens. Eleazar goes down to the watering hole when all of the young single women are coming down to the watering hole, sees a very attractive woman, asks her for a drink. She says, sure. Also for your camels, which was an exact answer to the prayer that Eleazar had prayed. And now at the end of that, in verse 21, he gazed at her in silence, probably while she's pouring water out for his camels, to learn whether the Lord had prospered his journey or not, whether the Lord had been a part of that. Remember, we had said last week, too, that Eleazar had prayed and planned. He put a plan together. And together with the prayer and planning was able to go forward. It wasn't just a prayer and sit back on the couch. It wasn't just planning without prayer, but they went hand in hand. And so God is, as we know, thanks to Joe's spoilers, that he is prospering. He's going to prosper that prayer and that planning. Interesting to note, Eleazar may have been a pagan before meeting Abraham, and he prays to the God of Abraham. So it's just kind of an interesting side note there, and you look at the faith of Eleazar. So pick up in verse 22. See, that was a really short...
That was impressive.
How do you like that? Verse 22 says, when the camels had finished drinking, the man took a gold ring weighing a half shekel and two bracelets for her arms weighing 10 gold shekels and said, please tell me whose daughter you are. Is there room in your father's house for us to spend the night? And she said to him, I'm the daughter of Bethuel, son of Malka, whom she bore to Nahor. She added, we have plenty of both straw and fodder and room to spend the night. The man bowed his head and worshipped the Lord and said, blessed be the Lord, the God of my master Abraham, who has not forsaken his steadfast love and his faithfulness towards my master. As for me, the Lord has led me in the way to the house of my master's kinsman. Then the young woman ran and told her mother's household about these things. What do you find interesting in what we just read in 22 to 28? Anything stand out to you?
Besides,
there's quite a few things
happening.
A nose
ring and bracelets?
Yeah. If you go on the internet and you look up whether it's appropriate to wear nose rings, there's a whole thing on this section and nose rings. I promise you, don't do it because you waste a lot of time doing that. But... if you ever wondered, it's in there. What else do you find out? Okay, let's look at 22. We'll just back right back up. Camel's finished drinking. All of a sudden, he brings out the gold, right? Mm-hmm. He brings out the gold ring weighing half a shekel, two bracelets for her arms weighing 10 gold shekels. So he's pulling out wealth. He's showing her that he's not just a poor beggar. That's one thing. I'm not just here to beg for what's yours. I have a purpose. He pulls all this out and he tells her, whose daughter are you? Is there room in your father's house for us to spend the night? He's showing her that he has the means to pay for his room and board. And also, again, probably not a poor beggar. There's a purpose here. And it's important, especially in this day and age that we're talking about here in the book of Genesis, people were often very hospitable. And so you look at her hospitality as she responds to him. She tells him who she is and then adds, without asking her father, by the way, We have plenty of straw and fodder and room to spend the night. So she's either making a business deal here. You know, we have some space to rent out because you have gold, or she's being very hospitable, or maybe a little bit of both. I would lean towards being a little bit of both in terms of just the hospitality that she's getting ready to show. Her actions and her desire to help and to open the doors to her house and what have you are just reinforcing the fact that she's a servant, meaning a good woman, that she has a good heart.
She was an animal lover.
She's an animal lover?
Mm-hmm. Because he asked her if they have room to spend the night.
Mm-hmm.
And her answer, according to my version, says, we've got plenty of straw and fodder.
For your camels.
As well as room for you.
Yeah, yeah.
So she's worried more about the livestock than she was him, necessarily.
Yeah.
So.
Right. Okay.
I'm just
saying. You might be right. So, her hospitality showing through, just her personality. So, Eleazar has picked a winner here, right? And really, God has picked a winner here. She has the looks and the servant's heart, right? That's earlier on. She was very attractive in appearance. And also, she's very hospitable. She's opening her door to him. Anything else stand out to you guys? That's a good point. She does mention straw for the camels. And by the way, you can stay there too.
Yeah, I mean, the way, that's kind of the way she phrases it, or at least the way it's written, it's like, oh, okay, sure.
What do you see in Eleazar's response in verse 26?
He immediately praises God.
Yeah. So any grand endeavor starts with prayer and ends in praise. Any grand endeavor starts with prayer and ends in praise. Do you follow that? And I didn't say starts in prayer and then goes the way you want and ends in praise. We have to realize that God's will's at work in all of our lives, and whatever's going on, he's going to deserve the praise. And so in this case, Eleazar gets to the T, his prayers are answered very specifically. They're very specific answers to his prayer. He immediately recognizes that. He's like, can we come over and spend the night with you? Because he's thinking, okay, now I've got to negotiate the deal is what's going on here. So Eleazar's thinking, I'm not going to negotiate this deal just with her, right? Mm-hmm. She's a young lady. I got to meet Dad. I got to do this right. I'm going to negotiate the deal, right? But in order to be able to do that, I got to get to the house. So am I going to be invited? Let's find out. She says, absolutely, come on down. And immediately he recognizes, oh boy, this is going in the right direction. Does that make sense?
He recognizes that, and he recognizes God's a part of it, and he recognizes. So he was given a task.
Yep.
By Abraham that led him to God.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, did Abraham...
Do you think this is... Go ahead.
Well, say Abraham had to know that he was not, that he was a pagan.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Abraham's whole household was probably, like all of his servants and what have you.
I just think it's an interesting assignment to assign a pagan. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're seeing, I think you may be.
I don't know if we know that.
We don't know necessarily. He may have already adopted Abraham's God,
okay.
But he continues to call him the Lord of my servant Abraham, or my master Abraham. Right. Abraham. He
I'm
continues
saying,
to tell
I'm
him.
Saying Abraham helped him find God mm-hmm. by giving him a task that would mm-hmm. point him in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is interesting what you did just point out is when he prayed originally, it was he prayed, "O Lord God, master of my master of Abraham," and so he's talking about the Lord God of Abraham, and here it just says.
It says the same.
Yeah,
the same
it does. Afterwards, says, the man bowed his head and worshipped the Lord.
The Lord has led me on a journey, so now he's starting to.
Yep.
Except,
yeah, it could be. This whole story could be part of Eleazar's faith journey as well.
Right,
he's learning and growing, and hopefully, all of us are still learning and growing. So Abraham could be kind of a baby believer in Yahweh, if you will.
Right.
He could still have some pagan roots. We're not really sure. We're not really given that. We don't even know in this section that it is Eleazar. We're assuming that it's the master of his household.
Well, what I'm saying, Abraham was wise enough to say, okay, this guy, maybe this guy's a baby.
He was trusted, for
baby,
sure.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
A baby believer, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to give him this task, which and where God will show his...
And I think his whole household was entrusted to Eleazar. And mm-hmm. it had said earlier on that had Abraham not had Isaac, Eleazar would have inherited Abraham's wealth. So isn't that interesting too? He's going to find the guy who's going to inherit the guy who's going to inherit his wealth's partner. So it's very faithful. This man is very faithful. But yes, in verse 26, he bows his head and he worships the Lord. And worshiping the Lord, probably praise, probably prayer. But it's a recognition, and that word "Lord" there, it's a recognition that there's someone sovereign who's overseeing what's happening here, right? He recognizes that, wow, something supernatural really is going on here. Mm-hmm. Something supernatural. There's a Lord that's overseeing and watching over this. Verse 27, and he said, "Blessed be the Lord, the God of my master Abraham, who's not forsaken his steadfast love and his faithfulness towards my master. As for me, the Lord has led me in the way to the house of my master's kinsman." And so, what are some other things that you see in that verse 27 when he says, "The Lord, the God of my master Abraham"? So we know specifically there's lots of false gods in Canaan, but this is very specific. The Lord, the God of my master Abraham. And what has he done? It says that he hasn't forsaken his steadfast love and his faithfulness towards my master. See how he kind of goes beyond just the prayer of thankfulness, but he's saying, look at how the Lord God Yahweh loves my servant, or my master, I'm sorry, Abraham. He loves him, and he's faithful towards him. You know, who picked who in this relationship between Abraham and God? Who picked who?
God picked Abraham.
God chose Abraham.
Of course.
God chose Abraham, and Abraham did have faith, and his faith was, it's famously, his faith was accounted to him for righteousness. But God chose, and God chose in this situation to number one, love Abraham, but number two, to show faithfulness. Isn't it kind of interesting that we would say that God is faithful to you? Shouldn't we be faithful to God? Do we ever think about turning the tables and God showing faithfulness to us? What does that mean when Eleazar says that he has been faithful to my servant? I keep saying that, to my master, Abraham.
He's done what he said he would do.
Absolutely. He's kept his promises, right? And I think that's a lesson for all of us, is that we have to lean on the fact that God keeps his promises. That he doesn't take back something, that he doesn't waver from his promises. And where does he give us his promises? He gives us his promises in his word, right? Our promises are received through the Bible. Sometimes he reveals, I believe that he can also reveal additional promises to us through prayer, through wise counsel. But he keeps his promises. He's a faithful God. Here? That's a good question.
What'd you ask?
I think that might be an easy answer, but let me hear someone else answer. Mm-hmm.
I think it's multiple. Two come to my mind.
Give them to us.
Well, let's do the short. The short one is that I think it's also Abraham had a belief that Eleazar is going to go walk 100 miles, and he's going to go find somebody of my people. So Rebecca happens to be of his people. So Abraham had faithfulness in that you're going to go walk a long ways, and you're going to go find my people, and you're going to find someone for my son. So I think that's the short term. And then the broader picture is, God said to Abraham, you know, you're going to be the from you is going to come the nations, and you know you're going to prosper, and the only way that's going to happen is for Isaac to have a wife and have children. So I think it's the longer term promise of years ago, but also just that of Abraham's belief that God's going to provide just in this small thing. It's kind of the long, in our lives, it's the long journey, and they're all made up of oftentimes a lot of little short things.
Yes. Good, good. Is that a good answer? Sufficient? That's the answer you were looking for. I thought you knew the answer when you asked that question. But that was a good question.
Ivan always knows the answer.
Ivan knows the answers.
They're rhetorical.
Yeah.
He's trying to see, do these guys know as much?
Stupid question.
Yes.
Where in Texas,
he is called by name.
It isn't.
Yeah, no, it's
it
is. It's not in chapter 24. Genesis 15:2. We just know that he's the head of the household.
Okay.
And it says in chapter 24 that he essentially calls his servant.
Okay.
And there's an assumption among people that it's probably Eleazar.
One will inherit my estate as Eleazar.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Up the
Magi. Yep. And earlier on, Abraham had given him some criteria, right? And one of the criteria in verse 7, the Lord, the God of heaven, who took me from my father's house and from the land of my kindred, who spoke to me, swore to me, he will send an angel before you, and then you shall take a wife for my son from there. The long and short of it is, he sends Eleazar back to find a wife from his kinsmen. And so that's Eleazar's prayer here. He says in verse 27 at the end of that, as for me, the Lord has led me in the way to the house of my master's kinsman. Now, I don't know kind of the genealogy behind her, letting him know whose father she is. But I think that's part of the answer to his prayer is when she says, this is who my father is. Do you see that? When the servant gets that answer, he knows, boom, she's the right person. She meets all the criteria, checks all the boxes. You follow that? And so he says, now the Lord has led me to the house of my master's kinsman. Look at verse 28. Then the young woman ran and told her mother's household about these things. Let's pick up verse 29. Rebekah had a brother whose name was Laban. Laban ran out towards the man to the spring. As soon as he saw the ring and the bracelets on his sister's arms and heard the words of Rebekah, his sister, thus the man spoke to me. He went to the man, and behold, he was standing by the camels at the spring. He said, come in, O blessed of the Lord. Why do you stand outside? For I have prepared the house and a place for the camels. So the man came to the house and unharnessed the camels and gave straw and fodder to the camels. And there was water to wash his feet and the feet of his men who were with him. Then food was set before him to eat. But he said, I will not eat until I have said what I have to say. He said, speak on. Let's continue. So he said, I'm Abraham's servant. The Lord has greatly blessed my master, and he has become great. He's given him flocks and herds, silver and gold, male servants and female servants, camels and donkeys. And Sarah, my master's wife, bore a son to my master when she was old. And to him he has given all that he has. My master made me swear, saying, you shall not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites in whose land I dwell, but you shall go to my father's house and to my clan and take a wife for my son. I said to my master, perhaps the woman will not follow me. But he said to me, the Lord before whom I have walked will send his angel with you and prosper your way. You shall take a wife for my son from my clan and from my father's house. Then you will be free from my oath when you come to my clan. And if they will not give her to you, you will be free from my oath. I came today to the spring and said, O Lord, the God of my master Abraham, if now you are prospering the way that I go, behold, I'm standing by the spring of water. Let the virgin who comes out to draw water, to whom I shall say, please give me a little water from your jar to drink, and who will say to me, drink, and I will draw for your camels, and let her be the woman whom the Lord has appointed for my master's son. before I had finished speaking, in my heart, behold, Rebecca came out with her water jar on her shoulder, and she went down to the spring and drew water. I said to her, please let me drink. She quickly let down her jar from her shoulder and said, drink, and I will give your camels drink also. So I drank, and she gave the camels to drink. Then I asked her, whose daughter are you? He's recapping the whole thing, obviously. She said, the daughter of Bethuel, Nahor's son.
That's a
Nahor's son, whom Malka bore to him. So I put the ring on her nose and the bracelet on her arms. Then I bowed my head and worshipped the Lord and blessed the Lord, the God of my master Abraham, who led me by the right way to take the daughter of my master's kinsman for his son. Now then, if you're going to show steadfast love and faithfulness to my master, tell me. If not, tell me that I may turn to the right hand or to the left. That was a long story. But he's asking, this is interesting, he's asking, he's not asking her father, he's asking her brother, Laban, and giving the whole story and saying, like, this is a big deal, this is a planned thing, we didn't do this kind of just on a whim, right? There's a lot going on here. There's Abraham, this wealthy guy, whose wife at an old age bore a son, who's going to inherit all that wealth. And I'm looking for a wife. I prayed to God. They're already, you know, likely worshiping the Lord. In verse 31, he says, come in, O blessed of the Lord. Why do you stand outside? For I've prepared the house and a place for your camels. Immediately, he's shown hospitality to come into the house. Laban recognizes Eleazar as being blessed of the Lord, maybe because he's wealthy. I don't know. She shows up with gold on her arm and in her nose. Quick to point that out. And so there's wealth going on. She's unmarried, presumably then, therefore available. But Eleazar gives the entire story to show we had a plan. And he asks Laban, the brother, will you allow me to take her back to be the wife? The study note in the ESV says that he's asking Laban, and because Rebecca's brother, it's suggested that he's taken on the day-to-day responsibility of overseeing the family. While Laban's father, Bethuel, is still alive, his lack of involvement in the narrative suggests that he may well be incapacitated, possibly through old age. And so Laban,
he's there
as the head of the household, is making the decisions. Go ahead.
Verse 50, which you hadn't got to yet.
Verse 50, he's there.
Laban and Bethuel answer. So he's at least there listening to the recap. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So, you know what's interesting? Another spoiler alert is in chapter 25, Abraham remarries and has 6 more kids.
Yep.
And Isaac is 40 years old. So both Abraham and Isaac are clearly vigorous enough to have made this journey by themselves. So why is it Eleazar? It's something about faithfulness. I mean, there's something about the ability of Rebecca to buy the story.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it Eleazar that's going to pitch the deal?
Why isn't it
Isaac?
Well, and then there's also the faith of Isaac as opposed to, wait a second, I'm not sure I want you to pick this.
Well, we find that out in 25 that he buys in pretty quick.
Yeah.
So she's,
to say the least,
she's a good price.
Yeah.
But
there's a note.
You got
a note.
Why? You know, it's almost Eleazar's got a a missionary kind of role here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost a. And what I'm ambivalent about is, is she buying the gold, or is she buying the story of faithfulness and predestination or whatever it is?
I think there's a cultural element of comfort, good husband.
This man can take care of
you. Know, I think there's part of that.
But
also, don't remove God from the situation either, because I think that this was a planned marriage, but it wasn't planned by Abraham and Eleazar. It was planned by God.
Right.
Do you follow me?
Yeah.
And so her willingness to go is also just kind of a, I think that
confirmation.
it's confirmation of that. And I believe that any kind of trepidation or any kind of doubts that she may have had, God himself could have laid those doubts aside and said, you know what, whispered in her ear and said, you know what, it's in fact Eleazar in this narrative that I just read, there's more detail in his narrative than we're given in the original story. Like, for example, you pointed out the fact that the ring was placed on her nose, right? But he also mentions that, and he goes back to what Abraham had said originally, that the angels would be going before him, and the angels would be with him, helping him with this decision-making. Assuming that everything Eleazar said was accurate and the angels were involved in this, they would also be ministering servants to help everybody make the right decisions, I believe, in the situation.
The logical thing for Eleazar to do on this trip is to show up in town and say, hey, where are the descendants of Nahor? That's the logical thing to do.
Yeah, I gotta find these people, and then I'll...
He was told by Abraham, go back to
my kinsmen.
Find a wife there.
Yep.
Not go to the well and...
Well, the logical thing for him to do was to show up and say, I got gold and cattle. Who wants a piece of this?
Exactly.
Bring your women out.
Bring your pretty ones first.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because I want to make Isaac happy.
He could have did a whole lineup here, right?
let's get this deal done.
Well, I think you're making a really good point, because we talked about the prayer and the plan that he put together. But kind of what you're saying is almost the easy way, right? To go and just round up all the women, line them up. We got all this wealth and camel. And you could have done kind of that show that I don't watch, but The Bachelor. You could have done a whole Bachelor thing minus Isaac being there. And you could have just done this whole thing.
Firm disclaimer there.
Yeah, I had to put that out there just to make sure no one mistook the fact that. So, but he could have done that, right?
Wow. What show?
Wow!
Right? And he had the money to be able to do it. He could have had a little. And in fact, what would have been happening? Because we were wondering whether she willingly. There would have been people probably lined up for that well, to be honest with you.
Right.
But what he's doing is he's kind of sitting back when he meets her. When he meets her.
Antithesis of Abraham.
You know? In what way?
Well, Abraham, hey, I gotta have a son.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go take it upon myself to do it.
That was mutual between him and his wife to take it.
Nonetheless, they took the matters into their own hands.
That's right. We said doing God's will my way, right? Eleazar doesn't announce before he asks for water. He doesn't announce who he is and have his gold, you know, all out there. He sees first that she's servant-hearted, that she's kind, and goes forward. Interesting.
And he makes it a matter.
He does.
Yeah, he does.
He takes the logical piece out.
He puts the faith out there first.
Yeah, this is going to be God's choice, not mine.
Now, we did dabble a couple of weeks ago into the whether he was testing God or not. I don't know if y'all remember that. We don't have to go that way. But because his prayer was very specific. And I think what we said then is... that I believe God likes specific prayers. And I think that he does give specific answers. And I've been amazed over the past, more amazed, I mean, I think I've always been amazed about it, but I've been keeping closer tabs on answered prayers. And there's been so many, just in Wednesday morning, there's been so many answered prayers. And we take prayers every Sunday. And we just have lists and lists of prayers. I redid the form, and now we have more prayers because there's more room to write, which is just a psychological thing. They didn't have enough room. They didn't write as many prayer requests. Now they have more room, and wow, the prayers have just been pouring in. The requests have been pouring in, and we've had so many answered prayers. And I think sometimes we forget to do what Eleazar did, to take it back to the lesson. As soon as he realized his prayer was answered, he immediately praised God and said, thank you for that. And I do think that just in generally speaking, Christians in general, and probably me specifically, don't remember to praise and to worship God for answered prayer. We pray for little things like that the Riveras would sell their house, right? We may or may not have prayed, thank you, that they sold their house, right? But things like that happen on a daily basis. And Eleazar is quick to realize that this is a very specific answer to a very specific prayer. Yeah. Other thoughts? I enjoy the looking at the hospitality that he's shown by the family. And I want to mention this comment too, this quote from my notes. It said, on the surface, the servant's task was impossible. Go to a strange land, meet an unknown maiden, convince her and her family to consent to a marriage with an unknown third party, and then return her to Isaac. That he was successful is a testimony to his faith and his faithfulness.
You know, another thing is this: we've got the application here. Eleazar is such a wonderful example. A, we don't even know who he is. So, you know, we're assuming it's Eleazar. You know, so you kind of think of this guy. You know, it's not about him. He has servant mentality. You know, it says in 15:2, all the wealth of Abraham is going to Eleazar. And as you say, you know, he's finding somebody else to get the wealth. There's just so many things that you can say, I want to be like that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I doubt too many people, when they think of, you know, who are some of the heroes of Genesis? I bet he didn't make the top 10 list.
That's a big deal, right?
Absolutely.
Talk about a matchmaker.
Just everything.
Yeah, really good. Just the faithfulness of the servant, and understanding and leaning. And you wonder too, because we talked about him being pagan. Was he pagan? Was he good? Where did he learn to be that faithful? You know, you go back to Abraham, and Abraham's faith was accounted to him for righteousness. And so we recognize that Abraham had his peaks and valleys in his faith walk, but this Eleazar, I believe that he has a deep affection for Abraham.
And he's been with him through thick and thin.
And he's been with him through thick and thin. And he's probably learned a little bit in terms of how to, number one, about Abraham's God, but number two, about just the faithfulness that is reciprocal between God and Abraham, the relationship that they have. Van, you were going to say?
What are you saying? That was his role.
To be obedient.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think that was, I'm saying that was kind of part of him anyway.
Probably.
But he's starting to recognize, that faithfulness in his practical life is starting to pay off for him in his spiritual life.
So even though it's our role and maybe a servant's role, if you have a bad boss over time, the longer that you're with that bad boss, your faithfulness towards that person begins to erode.
Right.
Maybe you start to talk about them at the water cooler or, you know, with your other folks. And if they give you a task that seemingly is impossible, you look at each other and you say, this is ridiculous. I can't believe they're making me do this.
I think the credit goes more to Abraham than it does.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the credit is to Abraham and his character reflected in the way his servant responds to him. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's good evidence that Abraham is probably a pretty good guy.
It looks like for Eleazar, it's more than just a job.
I think I'm with you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of like saying, you know, the pastor is responsible for all the good of the congregation.
But the worker bees are
hands
getting things done, right?
They're the hands and feet, too. It's the whole body.
Let's take a minute and look at the response from Laban, verse 50. Then Laban and Bethuel answered. And so here's Bethuel, now dad's in the picture, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then Laban and Bethuel answered and said, the thing has come from the Lord. We cannot speak to you bad or good, but behold, Rebekah is before you. Take her and go, and let her be the wife of your master's son, as the Lord has spoken. When Abraham's servant heard their words, he bowed himself to the earth before the Lord, and the servant brought out jewelry of silver and gold and garments and gave them to Rebekah. He also gave to her brother and to her mother costly ornaments. And he and the men who were with him ate and drank, and they spent the night there. When they arose in the morning, he said, "Send me away to my master." Her brother and her mother, said, "Let the young woman remain with us a while, at least 10 days. After that she may go." But he said to them, "Do not delay me. Since the Lord has prospered my way, send me away that I may go to my master." They said, "Let us call the young woman and ask her." And they called Rebekah and said to her, "Will you go with this man?" She said, "I will go." So they sent away Rebekah, their sister, and her nurse, and Abraham's servant, and his men. And they blessed Rebekah and said to her, "O our sister, may you become thousands of 10,000s, and may your offspring possess the gate of those who hate him." Pretty cool story, right? The response to Laban and Bethuel is awesome. Because, what's that? This is a prosperity gospel. The response to Laban and Bethuel is pretty awesome, because their response is, after they're given the story, they're like, "Well, this is God's thing, and I'm not going to get in the way of God's thing." It's basically kind of paraphrasing what they said there. This is the Lord. I don't have a yes or a no answer, right? This is the Lord. And so my study note says that Rebekah's brother and father, from the ESV study note, acknowledge that the providential nature of all that has taken place convincingly indicates that Rebekah should become Isaac's wife. This is clearly God's will. This is clearly God's will. So they're not going to stand in the way. In verse 51, "Behold, Rebekah is before you. Take her and go. And let her be the wife of your master's son, as the Lord has spoken." They have a little bit different take than Rebekah's mom. She's a little more hesitant. What does her mom say to do?
Wait a minute. She says,
10-day cooling off period.
Yeah. Let's talk about
this is happening too fast.
We need to do a background check.
Right. We need a cooling off period, 10 days. Let's just figure this thing out. Mm-hmm. So a little bit different take from father and brother than mom. And you know.
But ultimately, they leave it up to Rebekah.
But ultimately, that's interesting, too, because originally dad and father are like, "Take her and go." And then they bring Rebekah in and give her a say.
Culturally, that's crazy.
It's different, right, from that culture, that what we know about that culture. Abraham's servant goes into praise mode again. But he also does the very practical, and he brings out the gifts. And the gifts begin to then confirm what the servant had earlier said about Abraham's wealth. But presumably, he had given her a few pieces of gold, but now that the answer is yes, he brings out the garments. He brings out the good stuff, right? He gives them to Rebekah, and he also gave them to her brother and her mother and costly ornaments. This is almost like, because he's given them to the family, you think kind of in terms of a dowry type thing that's going on here.
Well, yeah, that's probably just a cultural part of it, isn't it?
Where they're given to the family, right? You think in that culture, we're taking something valuable from you. So we're giving something valuable in return, not buying Rebekah, but just kind of from a cultural standpoint and from what's happening there. So I do think that it's Ellie. Go ahead.
Giving assurance
for donkeys.
Yeah. This journey to get to this area. Took Eleazar a while. It was 520 miles to get there. And so 21 days to travel. So he's eager to depart. 21 days. I mean, we're talking nearly a month just to get back. I've been gone that long. Presumably, he's been gone at least a month already. It's going to take maybe another month to get back, right? So he doesn't want to delay. He wants to hurry back, bring her back. And, of course, Mom wants an extra 10 days or so. Don't know why she chooses that. Maybe, like you said, a cooling off period. But ultimately, they say, okay, don't delay me. Since the Lord has prospered my way, send me that I may go to my master. He's eager to get back. He recognizes again that God has prospered the journey. Remember, he had prayed that at the beginning of our lesson this morning. In verse 21, he gazed at her in silence to learn whether the Lord had prospered his journey or not. And now he says, since the Lord has prospered my journey, send me on my way. And I do think in verse 58, it's interesting. They call Rebecca to her, will you go with this man? And she says, I will go. I think it goes back to the family's faithfulness. When you look at Laban and Bethuel, they're like, God's in this. We're not going to get in the way. I think Rebecca is also recognizing that. Yeah, did the wealth help? It maybe helped, right? Had he come a poor beggar, maybe they would have had a different response. But that's not how it happened. Verse 59, they sent Rebecca away, their sister and her nurse.
I don't think their motive was wealth. Right?
I don't either. But I think that,
that's a cultural thing. And
it helped confirm, though, that this is a legitimate thing, right? If he shows up in tattered clothes beggar.
I don't know if it confirms it, because what I'm saying is that was expected. I mean, had this just been Joe who shows up and says, I'm looking for a...
Then it would have been like, no, this is not. This is shady, as my kids would say.
It would have been like, what do you got? What do you got for my daughter? What are we getting?
Right.
But they recognize.
And they're not going to give their daughter to someone who's not going to be able to protect and care for. And you follow?
But they were willing to give away based on what they recognize as the Lord's will.
Yeah.
Plus, they got bonus points.
And it's interesting in verse 60, when they offer the blessing, our sister, may you become thousands of 10,000s, and may your offspring possess the gates of those who hate them. There's an expectation that she's going to get married, and she's going to have kids, right? That's what happens when you get married. You're going to get married, and you're going to have children, and may your offspring become thousands of 10,000s. Without even knowing it, they're blessing her with a blessing that aligns with God's will. Because God's will from the very beginning was that their offspring, from Abraham and now to Isaac, would become many nations, right? Exactly. And so, without even necessarily realizing it, their blessing aligns with God's will.
Where's the gates of the enemy?
I don't understand that either.
What do you guys think that means?
They have to occupy the West Bank.
No, I don't know.
If you control the gates of the enemies, you control the in and out and what they do, right? You control them.
Well, yeah.
Does anybody have a study note on that one? No. So the ESV study note says, the hopes expressed in this brief blessing echo the divine oath made to Abraham. So again, known to them, not known to them, maybe the Spirit's working in them already, and their blessing is aligning. That's a line. But here's the next part. Emphasizing both many descendants and a special descendant who will conquer his enemies. May your offspring possess the gates of those who hate him.
Jesus. Mine just says, one sentence, may the offspring possess the gates of their enemies means... may you overcome. If you possess the gates, you control them.
Yeah, that's not okay. The possession of the gate of the city was tantamount.
So they can't do anything without
Moses. Jesus.
Look at Genesis chapter 22, verse 15. Genesis 22, verse 15 to 18. This is right after Abraham did not withhold Isaac and was willing to offer him as a sacrifice. The angel stops him, and the angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time from heaven, and he said, by myself I have sworn, declares the Lord, because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you, and I will surely multiply your offspring as the stars of heaven and as the sand in the seashore, and your offspring shall possess the gates of his enemies.
Actually, it doesn't say gates for me.
What does it say in your
version? It says cities. I have gates in 24.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think we're talking about here?
Possession.
The gates around
the
city.
The primacy of Israel.
Oh, well, it's a specific actual. It says, "And your offspring shall possess that." The ESV study note talks about who the gates of the enemies is, and the reference to his enemies points in this direction. This is why Paul in Galatians can insist on one offspring, who is Christ. For offspring as a particular descendant. And this explains why Isaac is clearly set apart from Ishmael as Abraham's heir. From the perspective of the whole Bible, the oath to Abraham comes to fulfillment in Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ possesses the gates of his enemies. And so that very specific offspring, may you have thousands, 10,000s, may your offspring, and that can be seen as singular, possess the gates of his enemies. And so you could look at that as the nation, but really what we're doing here and the purpose of Abraham and his descendants is to lead the way to Christ. All roads point to Christ in these stories. And isn't it interesting that their blessing echoes God's plan? I think that's amazing. I mean, they're absolutely aligned, and now you see very clearly that Rebecca is going to be right in there, a part of that. Pretty cool.
Yes. So they went. She says, "I will go." So they sent away their sister Rebecca and her nurse. How old is Rebecca?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. There's probably something in here that says,
does everybody,
but I don't have that on here.
Have a nurse.
Everybody has a nurse.
In 61, it says Rebecca and her maid.
She's a.
Yeah,
does it?
Yeah, I think
she's a. She is a maiden. She's probably at least marrying age for that culture,
which
is means
young.
14.
Which means that she
north
was in puberty.
Yeah. I mean, she could be fit.
Right.
Yes. I mean,
I don't know
40,
why.
Huh?
I don't know why it sends her nurse along with her.
Well, I mean, it's just interesting. I mean, yeah. It may not matter, but it's interesting.
I think that's
she's
probably
young,
her.
And they left the decision up to her.
I think that's her appointed servant, is what that is. So.
You know,
I'm thinking like Mary Poppins or something.
But, you know.
Well, you know. Well, I will say I do. We address. Before we address, you know, we talk a lot about the masters, but you know, so this, but the serving, you know, when did this master slave thing disappear? You know,
that's a yes,
anyway. That's your question.
Huh?
I don't get what do you mean?
Well, you know, so. We need to love our neighbor as ourselves, and there's so many, you know, and I don't like owning people, you know,
mm-hmm.
Age, you know, so when did, I know, you know, we get by a lot of this on culture and, you know, so many people sleep with prostitutes and all this, but I'll just hang with the slave piece first, you know. Is that, you know, there's so, and this is viewed as acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think when we...
And I struggle with that.
So when we think of slavery, what we think of is slavery in the Americas or modern-day slavery.
Yeah.
Actually owning somebody else as an object.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is very different.
That's helpful.
And that's what I was.
Yeah.
That's where I was heading with that. So, we think of.
He summed it up succinctly.
Yeah, he did. He did much better because he's yeah. So. So. Yeah, and we think in terms of slavery, in terms of.
Yeah, you kind of think maybe the Jews were slaves to the Egyptians,
yeah.
But they weren't. Yeah. So there's a different.
Yeah. That slavery is a bit more brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It has to do with agency, but, in other words.
But even in the New Testament, in the New Testament, there's slavery.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and there's conversations about, you know, how to treat your slaves and how slaves should treat their masters. And but even that slavery, that New Testament form of slavery, is likely different than what we think of when we think of slavery in the Americas, for example, modern day slavery. So, but good questions. Other thoughts? We'll have Rebecca and Isaac meet next week and see what happens. Yeah. You know, the tension's kind of gone now.
I'm just
I hope they like each other.
Yeah, I'm hoping they like each other. I'm not going to be here next week, so I'm I've read farther ahead
than we'll get.
Yeah.
You could not read farther.
I do hope it works out for them.
Those kids.
I'm not going to be here.
Hope things work out. Well, you can listen to the podcast now that the...
I was doing a little math here. Abraham's brother Nahor had 12 sons. And it's assumed that those 12 sons had...
12 kids each.
12 kids.
Yeah.
We're talking 144 possible girls.
Yeah. That he could have lined up. Pick up. Right.
Unless there's just one.
This is just one.
Yeah. You're trying to go back the little week, aren't you, Ken?
This is cool.
Yeah.
Other closing comments? Who would like to close us in prayer?